Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it, just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello listeners, this is Doreen Rosenfeld, your host for tonight's episode, and man, you're going to love this one. This is going to be a great episode. I have Stephen Washington on here talking about overcoming addiction. That's something we all struggle with, especially those of us who've had head injuries and have less resistance to what's out there in the world. So Stephen Washington is the author of Recovering You, Soul Care and Mindful Movement for Overcoming Addiction. He danced on Broadway in Disney's The Lion King before his love of movement inspired him to become a teacher. Stephen lives joyfully in recovery and is passionate about helping others as they navigate towards health and happiness. He offers Qigong, Pilates, dance, meditation, laughter, and more throughout his website. And he can tell you about his website later. Substance abuse issues have worsened dramatically in recent years, with alcohol and drug addiction soaring. Our collective anxiety also shows up in addiction, overeating, mindless scrolling, and excessive online spending, and there are more ways. Whether you are on the path of recovery, taking your first steps, or simply feeling adrift and unmoored, Recovering You offers a lifeline to the discovery of a new and better way of being. Stephen shares a story of growing up around alcoholism and going into recovery for his own addictions. But the heart and soul of this book is his process of guiding readers through fear, shame, and regret into community and gratitude. He can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And we'll ask him a little later in the show to tell people specifically how to get to him. But right now, I want to welcome Mr. Stephen Washington. Hello there, Stephen.
Hello, Doreen. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Hey, you know, what you're talking about, as I was just telling you, is a pretty darn interesting field that most of us can relate to from knowing people or from ourselves. And I want you to talk about a little bit, what prompted you to go into recovery, per se?
Well, what prompted me to go into recovery was just my own addiction to alcohol and drugs, and as well as cigarettes. I started drinking when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
And I had my last, what will hopefully be my last drink, at age 30, 31 years old.
Wow.
I'm now 51.
Okay.
And, and it was, and basically what led me to getting into recovery and getting sober was just, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I got to the point in my, I got to the point in my addiction where I had lost the choice in the matter as to whether or not I was going to drink or use drugs. I was doing those things in order to just cope and just survive and just get through the day. There were many days when I would wake up and part of me would feel disappointed that I would be able to take another breath because I just felt that hopeless in my life.
Wow.
And something inside of me wanted more for myself. Something inside of me told me that I did not have to live that way. And thank goodness I had a really good friend of mine who was in recovery, who made sobriety look really good. And I just at that particular moment, I just had enough willingness to reach out for help. And thank goodness he reached back and he helped me get sober. And that was a little over 20 years ago.
Wonderful. Wow, it's great to have a friend who's setting a good example like that.
Absolutely. And he's still my friend today. He's just such a brilliant person, and he's helped so many people in recovery. It's just remarkable. And what I've tried to do in my own recovery is basically use his example as a way to live a life that is meaningful and is grounded and is rooted in service.
Wow, pretty inspiring. I mean, he was right there when and where you needed him to be.
Absolutely. And one of the things, Doran, that I really respected about him, and I still do, is that he never forced it on me. He never stood on the soapbox and told me about all the virtues of living a sober life. He just did his thing. He just did his thing, which was to live sober and try to be a power of example for me. And that was enough. It was more about attraction rather than promotion. And that was really impactful for me.
Wow. That's really good. So he was basically a mentor to you through the whole ordeal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So what made you decide? Did you just feeling sick and tired of feeling there?
Well, what made me decide to try something different was the fact that I was miserable. I was miserable and I was dying on the inside. I was dying on the inside emotionally and spiritually, and also it was taking a toll on me physically. So I had two choices. I could either continue doing what I was doing and move quickly towards my own death, or mm-hmm. I could go in the opposite direction and move towards my own health and well-being and my happiness. And I chose my health, well-being, and happiness over the suffering of addiction.
Very nice. So this friend of yours, what made him, do you know what his story was? What made him decide to become involved?
Well, his story is not unique when it comes to addiction. I think he also lived a life that was out of control, and where he lost the choice in the matter in terms of whether or not he was going to use. He was a drug addict primarily, but he also had issues with alcohol as well. And he had a pretty low bottom. I would say that for me, in my addiction, I suffered a lot, but I know that my experiences with drugs and alcohol could have been far worse. And when we look at if we look at our lives and our relationship to substances that are addictive, as like being on in a building on an elevator, and the top floor is where we would rather be instead of being down below in the basement. I would say I got off my elevator ride just before I hit rock bottom in the basement. And my friend, in his story, went a little bit further into the basement and on multiple occasions almost lost his life. And it's a miracle that he survived what he survived, because he went through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to be there to help you, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and many other people as well.
Okay, so you said you haven't had a drink in, you know, a couple decades. I mean, do you expect to feel the need to have one in the future?
That's a very good question. You know, the thing is, Doran, even with 20 years of sobriety, there are moments when the thought enters my mind to have a drink. And usually that is because I'm feeling something that I don't want to feel, that I want some sort of escape. I want in some way, shape, or form to check out and not have to deal with reality. So the thought or the impulse to have a drink comes and goes, and it doesn't happen every day, but it does happen occasionally. And what I've come to get better at with each passing day of sobriety, with each year, is how to have those feelings or that impulse and not act upon it immediately. Mm-hmm. To just take a few breaths and let that moment pass, because it will pass. And if it feels like I'm truly in danger of potentially relapsing, I have tools that I could use, like picking up the phone and calling someone and sharing with them what's going on with me. Or I could go to a recovery meeting and just be in the company of others who understand what it's like to be a recovering alcoholic or addict. And those are the things that I turn to, as well as prayer. My friend, who I mentioned a moment ago, one of the things that he told me very early on in my recovery is that it's wonderful to connect with people, to get phone numbers, because you never know when you're going to need to reach out to someone. But he also stressed the importance of building your spiritual life, building a connection to a higher power, a higher power of your own understanding, because when times are tough, sometimes you're not going to be able to get a hold of someone. So the only thing standing between you and a drink or drug is your higher power. And I firmly believe that, and there have been many times when I've had to rely upon my spiritual strength, my spiritual fitness, to help me avoid relapsing. And and that's a tool that's just proved to be really valuable to me, and it becomes more and more valuable the longer I'm sober. Sometimes the further you are away from your last drink or drug, sometimes it makes it even more challenging than if it was more recent, because the more distance you have from that last time of drinking and drugging, the more opportunity there is to forget just how bad it was.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The mind is cunning. The mind is funny, and addiction is cunning. And you know this. The addiction is very cunning, baffling, and powerful.
Wow. So tell me, did you have any kind of religious or spiritual life before your alcohol phase?
I grew up in a family that was Southern Baptist,
poor baby.
And my And my grandmother was fairly religious, and my father and my mother were not. They weren't regular churchgoers, although I think my mother really wanted to be that, but she couldn't seem to make that happen for herself. And mm-hmm. I remember having church forced upon me when I was a kid, and I remember rebelling against that. And I never felt very comfortable at church. I never felt like I was accepted for who I was. I being a young person and knowing that I was gay, or knowing that I was different from other boys, made me feel like I was a bit more on the outside looking in, and I never felt like that environment was a place that would be accepting of me. And so, having said that, I still had my own relationship with God or a higher power. I didn't always believe that higher power loved me or cared about me or was concerned about me, but I knew in my heart that something out there existed. And okay. So when I finally found my way into recovery and in 12-step recovery, where everyone is encouraged to develop a relationship with a power greater than themselves of their own understanding. So that could be whatever it is that's meaningful to you. It's not right. According to any religion or any doctrine. It's what's meaningful to you. And nature can be a person's higher power. music and art could be someone's higher power, because those are things that are greater than us and that move us in very profound, important ways. And so one of the things that was helpful for me is that when I got sober, identifying a power greater than myself and building a relationship with it wasn't too difficult, because I already believed in something. Not that you can't get sober and not believe in a power greater than yourself. There are so many people who are sober and are agnostic or atheist. So it's not a requirement. It's just a suggestion. Mm-hmm. And I just took that suggestion to heart. And it's been a really amazing journey over the last 20 years, how that relationship with my higher power has deepened and has helped me to enrich my sobriety and just my life in general.
Huh. Very interesting. Because I have never been addicted to anything, but I've had a head injury. And I mm-hmm. know that it was something beyond me that helped me, survive that experience. And
yes.
I've never known what it is. I mean, I'm Jewish, and, basically, in our religion, like a rabbi always says, God doesn't care whether you believe in God or not.
Mm.
It matters what you do and how you act to other people.
Yes. That's beautiful.
And beautiful. I can definitely relate to that myself, yes.
Yeah, you just reminded me of something that my friend Jennifer says in my book, Recovering You. It's the last one, the final chapter on faith, and she was speaking to people who may have a difficult time believing in a power greater than themselves, and she just encouraged people to put that on hold. That there, in your journey to recover, to get sober, to not overwhelm yourself with this, with the sense of urgency that you need to have a faith in something greater than yourself. Don't worry about that. It's okay that you don't believe in something, because that thing that's out there that's greater than you already believes in you, already loves you, just as
yes.
you are. And that in and of itself is just amazing and really heartwarming to contemplate and consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We all have our own struggles to fight with. We all have our own mountains to overcome. but
absolutely,
we have the tools to do it.
Absolutely. In my book, I really try to invite people or try to meet people wherever they are on their recovery journey, on their road to wellness. A lot of people don't have issues with alcohol or drugs or cigarettes. Some people have issues with food or with work or the internet or social media. There's so many gambling. There's so many things that we can use and become dependent upon that undermine our health and well-being, we just become powerless over these things, and that these dependencies bring about really negative consequences, but we don't have the power within ourselves to stop despite negative consequences. And so I talk about that a lot in the book, that you might not have the same story that I have, but if you can read the pages of the book, listen to my story and the friends that I interview in the book who are in recovery and how they share their stories, and just move through the book and just try to identify with the feelings behind the words and connect to it that way, more people, I think, would find resonance with what I offer in the book. And at the heart of the book is self-care. And self-care is so important. And most of us aren't getting enough self-care. And it's really important to take care of yourself. It's a full-time job to take care of ourselves. And I try to provide tools and practices for people to use to help them live more conscious and joyous and healthier lives.
Mm-hmm. So what was the impetus behind you writing the book?
Well, I wanted to write a book and share with people the things that have helped me in my recovery, the tools and the practices that have served me well and allowed me to be fortunate enough to be sober for as long as I've been sober. And the things that I've learned and that I share are things that I learned through my journey through 12-step recovery, also in all the years that I've spent in therapy, the books that I've read, my study of the body and traditional Chinese medicine and massage and meditation, and also just creative writing and journaling. And I try to offer all of the things that I've learned through all of those resources and place them in one holistic guide to help people navigate life. And life is challenging, right? There are a lot of challenges, and life can be very stressful. And one of the things that I think is important is that we have tools to help us manage life and all of its stresses, because stress is a very big trigger for people with addiction, for sure. But it's a trigger, and it impacts everyone. And I just wanted to provide people with tools to help them take better care of themselves. And so that's why I wanted to create this book and put it out into the world to, again, provide a service to others and help them to meet them wherever they are on their journey to wellness and help them to live a life that really is beyond where they ever thought they could be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very nice. So now would be a good time to ask you, you know, how do people find your book, or how do people find you?
Well, everyone can find my book at on Amazon, and also in Barnes & Noble. It's on bookshelves and also on the website. You can also find the book in local bookstores, and if you don't see it on the shelves, just ask the bookseller to order you a copy. People can also find me at my website, StephenWashingtonExperience.com, and there you'll see all the things that I offer. My main, I guess, flagship offering is SWE Studio. It is a wellness library community that I've created where I offer Pilates and Qigong fusion classes, as well as dance and laughter medicine and meditation and so much more to, again, help people live a more conscious and joyous life. And then all the other online courses that I offer, and it also links to all of my social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Medium, where I post a lot of my writings in addition to the book.
Very nice. Very nice. And I just want to say now, if anyone has a particular question for Stephen right now, please call in and ask. Call in number 424-243-9540 and press the number 1. That way, I'll see your number up here on my computer with a big question mark beside it. So I'll know that you have a question. I will call on you. So anybody's welcome to do that if you're listening to this show right now while we're doing it. It's, 7:30 p.m. on Thursday night. And if you're listening to it later, you can get in touch with Stephen through his website he was telling you about. So let me just switch topics and talk about your book. You told us a little bit, you offered tools for people and what worked for you. And you talk about other people. I assume that you interviewed a lot of your friends and people in recovery and asked them what they did or how they did it.
Yes. And in each chapter, I interviewed one of my recovery friends, and I asked them certain questions that are specific to the topic of that chapter, whether that is isolation and how that is a big part of addiction and how do we move out of isolation. I also cover the topic of fear. How do we manage our fears? Because fear is a big trigger for many of us in addiction and in recovery. I also deal with shame. But I also help to provide people with tools to deal with triggers. When they feel triggered, what is it that you do when you feel an impulse to act out with your addiction? And I also talk about how important gratitude is and how important it is to develop a network of people for social support. Social support is incredibly important in recovery. I know that I could not have gotten sober and maintained my sobriety for as long as I have without the help of other people. People need people. We all need a sense of connection and belonging. And so that's really important to have. And I also talk about how important it is to have some sort of faith, and that not even just faith in a power greater than yourself, but also faith in yourself. Because I think through the process of moving through addiction and eventually finding your way to recovery, there's a lot of opportunities that we've had to show up for ourselves, and we may have disappointed ourselves. We may have disappointed others. And so we develop this doubt as to whether or not we can trust ourselves, whether we can have faith in our ability to make sound decisions. And so I walk people through that process as well. And thank goodness I have so many friends who had such really profound and helpful experiences to share, and just some solid advice to give people who may be challenged in those areas.
Wow, very interesting. So tell me, do you have any contact with the family you were involved with before, the family you grew up with, where you saw addiction behaviors?
Of course. I mean, my family, I still, of course, am a part of my family, and my mother is still alive, and I have a sister, and I have brothers, I have a stepbrother, and so I have relationships with them, and we've all, over the years, have grown and healed a lot of those wounds. And They've all been a big part of my my recovery, and it's been an important part of my recovery process to make sense of the life that I lived with them, and also to understand what the situations that we had to navigate together and what belonged to me and what belonged to them. And for any wrongs that I may have done to any of them, to be able to have the opportunity to make amends and mend my behavior and build a new relationship with those people. And I think that it's made my recovery better. It's made my life better. It's made our relationships better. So yes, all of those people are still a very important parts of my life.
Wow. Very interesting. How did they feel when you first said you were going into recovery per se?
Well, overall people were supportive. I think some people didn't quite know the extent of my addictions. Some people, I think, felt uncomfortable by it because what can happen in relationships with people when one person gets sober, if the other person has perhaps an unhealthy relationship with alcohol or some other addictive behavior, it can shine a spotlight on their life and what they're doing. And they're losing a person who they may have had a sense of camaraderie with because you shared that activity together. And so when
right.
you change, sometimes you inadvertently invite other people to change, because people do have to change to some degree because you're no longer engaging in a behavior that you used to engage in around them or with them. And
right.
so it was very complicated, but overall I think it was a very positive experience. I'll never forget the time when I was with my father, and my father was an alcoholic who never got sober. He never made it to the rooms of recovery, so he never was able to get the gift that I received so freely, which is the gift of recovery. And I'll never forget when we were out on an errand, and I was with him in South Carolina where he lived, and I guess we were going to the grocery store. Maybe we were going to the liquor store because he wanted to pick up something, and he said to me, "So let me get this straight. You can't even drink beer?" And I said, "No, Daddy, I can't drink beer. Beer is alcohol. If I drink a beer, I will get drunk." So, yeah, but he couldn't understand that because my father drank beer like it was water. So that was a funny and a very enlightening moment for me.
Wow.
Bless his soul. Yeah.
Wow, that's major. So have you been in any serious relationships yourself, like romantic relationships outside of your family that had to be changed because of this?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Were you involved in any relationships that had to change because of your process?
I think my process of recovery certainly affected my relationships, and certainly affected very intimate relationships that I've had at various points in my life and in my recovery. I've never, when I think about my years of being an active alcoholic, I was involved in a relationship with someone, and during that time, the relationship fell apart as a result of my addiction, and we were never able to ever rekindle that relationship. But what happened is eventually we were able to rebuild a friendship down the road. And this person is now and has been one of my dearest friends in my life, and so grateful for him and the opportunity that I've had to be his friend and to love him and to be loved by him. But in sobriety, I've had many relationships, and the most meaningful relationship is the one that I have with my husband, Lee, and we've been together for 7 years, and he's been with me on this recovery journey as well, because the work only begins when you put down the drink or the drug. That's when the work begins, because then you have to get to know, you have to get to know yourself as a sober person, and you have to build new tools and coping mechanisms to deal with life on life's terms. So that's just the beginning of the growth journey. And 20 years later, I'm still growing. I'm still developing. And that has a tremendous impact on the relationships that I have that are with the people who are closest to me.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. What an encouraging story. So your relationship has morphed into a friendship, and that's really, really good to hear. Should be really encouraging to people, because, you know, you have to change your life when you enter any recovery program, but you don't have to give anything up necessarily, because just find a new way of looking at it, relating to it.
Indeed.
Yeah, so that's really neat. So I imagine being a professional dancer, your occupation before you became involved in this had a lot to do with the behaviors that led to your addiction.
Well, I began drinking when I was 15, and from the very beginning, I didn't drink. Like, there was something about the way that I drank that was questionable, because I enjoyed the way that it made me feel so much, and I wanted to repeat that feeling over and over and over again, because it helped me feel okay in the world. And so that informed my whole drinking career. And when I was a professional dancer, I always like to say that any kind of artist, whether performing artist, whether you're a dancer or an actor or a singer or a musician of sorts, and especially if you do theater, it's the kind of job where you mostly work at night. You have performances in the evening, 8 o'clock shows, or sometimes a matinee. Yes, you rehearse during the day at times, but it's a lifestyle that I think in some ways creates a environment where you can always have a reason to celebrate. You're always celebrating an opening of a show, or a closing of a show, or someone's birthday, or your 100th show, or what have you. So there's always an opportunity to be in an environment where there's alcohol, or where there are drugs, or where there's all kinds of things. And so it was definitely woven into my professional life. And for a long time, I was able to handle all that without great consequence. But eventually, the consequences of my addictions became more and more problematic, and more evident, and it became much more difficult to manage. And so that was also part of what led me to get sober, because it takes far more energy to be an active addict or alcoholic, a person, or there's so many different terms that are being used today around it. When I first got sober, everybody was an addict or an alcoholic, but I know now people are more comfortable with using a term like substance use disorder or a person who has substance use disorder. So, but I was able to manage all that until I wasn't able to anymore, and that led me to make a change. And I'm so grateful that the consequences weren't so great. Like, consequences to drinking and using drugs could be jails, institutions, or death. And so I'm grateful that I never had to face any of that. And so I had the chance to create a new life for myself. A lot of people don't get that opportunity.
Right. That's very interesting that you say that, because, your life does revolve around the evenings and the night and drugs and alcohol and things when you're an professional entertainer.
It's just part of the culture. It's just like, also, I think I also spent a lot of time when I was early on in my career where I would wait tables and work in restaurants. And that's another environment where it's easy to drink and party and stay up all night and do all that. I did my fair share of that as well. And at the time I loved it because I was young, 20 something, and I was resilient. My body could function without little sleep, and I was able to bounce back. And the older I got, the harder it was to bounce back from all that. It takes a lot more energy to manage a active addiction than it does to be sober. I much prefer to be sober.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. If people knew that and really believed it, we'd have a lot fewer addicts running around. Yeah.
Possibly.
It is. I mean, it's interesting because it's increasing alcoholism, substance abuse. It's increasing in recent years. And maybe that's just the more people are acknowledging it, but more people are being forced to live alone, especially in the recent pandemic, the last three years. I mean, the world started to open up, and people were kind of isolated and off on their own. And that fueled a lot of behaviors that people weren't necessarily proud of later.
Yeah, I've read a lot about that in recent years, and it makes sense. I think that what happened to all of us collectively really pushed people to the edge, and everyone's edge is different, but many people were pushed to the brink, and we were all searching for ways to cope with something that we had no experience dealing with before. We've never lived through what the coronavirus pandemic brought us, and many people sought comfort in alcohol. Many people sought comfort in drugs. Many people sought comfort in food or sex. I mean, so many different ways that we can check out and disconnect from the deepest parts of ourselves. And I'm always, when I go to recovery meetings, and I go to many, and mostly online, I'm always impacted by the people who got sober during the pandemic, who felt, who got to the same place that I got to 20 years ago, where they really reached a crossroads in their lives, and they were either going to walk towards life or they're going to walk towards death. And they all chose to walk towards life and got sober. And that's just remarkable. And I'm so grateful that that I have that community to rely upon. And there are so many other communities like that. I mean, I know I talk about 12-step recovery a lot because it's part of my story. It's part of my experience. But there are so many ways to connect to community because essentially it's a community. And again, it gets back to community support and how do we connect to people because people need people. And community gives us a sense of support and belonging and connection and care. And I think that that's such an important thing. And I think for the people who were able to find that in any way they could during this challenging past few years, their lives were better for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's definitely true. And, you know, this pandemic was the exact opposite of community, essentially, because we all had to isolate alone in our little groups. But because of the internet and, you know, outlets like that, we found a way to connect with other people. Because you're right, people do need that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just like how you and I are on this call right now, just connecting to one another, talking to each other, listening, finding where we are similar and where we're different, and just sharing in this human experience. There's something incredibly healing about that.
Yes. Yes, you're right. You're right. And, you know, different people find that in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to find the way that's right for you. And it's so neat to hear stories of people who can, the incredible success that can come from it, like in your case.
Yes. And that's what I tried to do when I wrote Recovering You. I tried to create a sense of community through the pages of the book because I share my story, my friends share their story, and I want people to feel as though we were wrapping our arms around them as they read the book. And it's the same kind of feeling that I get whenever I am in a movement class, and one of my mindful movement classes that I teach, and even the ones that I take, there's an incredible sense of community when you are together sharing an experience with other people. And one of the things that I felt called to do along with writing that book is create my online wellness community, SWE Studio, because I wanted to create a way for people to come together and to learn practices to help them take better care of themselves, and also to provide a really supportive and loving environment to help them along on their road to wellness. And so community is such a really important thing for me, and I know how much it's healed my life and continues to, and it's been a very big part of my recovery.
That's wonderful to hear. And just your love of movement, dancing and Pilates, and I mean, that's just wonderful that you're able to teach that action and go to classes and be with other people, because that is incredibly healing. I mean, from a chiropractor, from my point of view, it's like, yes, if everyone did that, we'd all be in so much better shape.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Physically and spiritually.
Yeah, I so agree with you. One of the things that I want to share with everybody is, I know some people listening might not know what Qigong is, what I teach. And Qigong is an ancient Chinese healthcare system that combines flowing movement, standing postures, deep breathing, and focused intention to activate, cultivate, and circulate life force energy. And life force energy is just the energy behind the beating of our heart. It animates this energy, this qi, animates everything that our bodies do for us, and animates everything really in the universe. When you look at the word qigong and you break it down, qi means energy and breath, and gong means work or skill. And so when we practice qigong, we become more skillful at managing our own energy. And that was huge for me when I first encountered it 10 years into my recovery. I was in Chinese medicine school, incredibly overwhelmed by the experience, really felt like I was on the verge of a breakdown or a relapse. And the classes that were offered in my school were really a lifeline for me, because it helped me literally go from moments before walking into the class, being in a panic, being in my car crying, overwhelmed by the experience, to walking into the classroom, settling in, listening to the professor talk about this ancient practice, and then experiencing it in my body. I was able to calm myself down. I was able to regulate myself. I was able to feel space in my body, which would relax the tension that had built up in my body because of the anxiety I was feeling. I was able to really smooth out some of the really difficult emotions I was feeling, and then would be able to calm my mind, which was racing and always looking towards the worst case scenario. And I was able to zoom out and just see the bigger picture. So from that moment on, I knew that qigong was going to be able to help me in my life, in my recovery. And I was determined to learn it enough so that I can share it with other people. So that's one of the reasons why movement is such a big part of my book. It's such a big part of my mission in this life, to share that with people and help people to really build new and different relationships with their body, and really tune into what they're feeling on the inside. Because life is so busy and chaotic and stressful that we often don't pay attention to what's happening within us. And this is an opportunity to check in and really get to know yourself better and heal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. I mean, in my work life, I mean, I'm a chiropractor, starts with CHI too, you know? Getting the body moving again, getting the energy flowing, getting it to work right. The power that made the body heals the body. And you just have to find a way to unleash that power.
I love that, Doran. Oh, I love that.
I'm one of the old-fashioned chiropractors who go with what the original chiropractors back in the late 1800s were saying. It's like, you know, the energy that made the body heals the body. We just facilitate that healing, but the body heals itself.
Yes, beautiful. Yes, I so agree. I so agree. And sometimes we need help. We need help from people who can help facilitate that even more. I think there's so much that we can do, and then there are other people out there who have gifts to share that help us to bridge the gap between where we are now and I think our ultimate health and well-being.
Yes. That's true. However, we find that, because different people can find it in different ways. I mean, you can dance. I don't have one body in my bone that can move correctly. That's just the way it is. I never could before my accident. Well, not a good excuse, but basically, I can't move. I'm one of the most uncoordinated people you're ever going to meet. But moving feels good. It works.
Yes. Does. It's incredibly healing. And one of the reasons why I wanted it to be a part of the book was because all the other things that I've done to support my recovery dealt with the mind, dealt with what my thoughts were, dealt with my emotions, but very little dealt with the body. And what I understand now from all the research I've done and just from experience is that most people who are dealing with addictions, and even people beyond that, have dealt with trauma, some kind of trauma in their life, and trauma settles in the body. It affects us physiologically, affects our minds, it affects our brain, and I wanted to offer people practices to help them to get in touch with their bodies and what they're feeling, and have that be a really important part of the puzzle of healing.
Yes, very nice. Very nice. I noticed you also stress meditation and laughter.
Mm-hmm. I do. Meditation has been a very important part of my recovery, and it's something that used to intimidate me greatly when I first began attempting to meditate, and I had so many preconceived notions about it, and I just would immediately give up. Just as I would attempt to do it, I would almost immediately give up. And then at one point in my recovery, I heard someone say that meditation can be as simple as turning the water on in the morning for your coffee or your tea, and then taking that time to just sit and just take some deep breaths. Meditation could be as simple as that. It doesn't have to be complicated. And so I've really gone from that place and of thinking about it in such simple terms, and I built a meditation practice that has served me so well, just to be able to get in touch with how I'm feeling in the moment, bring about a level of presence so that I'm not staring at the past or with regret or looking towards the future with worry or fear, but something that allows a practice that allows me to be present in the moment, because the present is where we hold our power. This is where we have the ability to make decisions and choices in the moment that affect our lives and the lives of others around us. And so I love that practice because of that. And laughter is so healing. I just think that laughter is incredible. There's so many benefits to laughing or smiling. It releases these feel-good hormones in the body, and it's something that we all have access to. And you don't even need to hear a joke in order to laugh. Just a minute of laughter a day can be incredibly healing. So I love sharing that with people.
Very nice. Yeah, reminds me of something I've said on the show before, but I'll say it again, that when you smile or you laugh, you actually change the blood flow in your face. When you lift up your lips with a smile, the blood goes straight back and cools the brain where it doesn't normally. So you're actually changing the blood flow to your brain because you're smiling and laughing.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I love that. That's a bit of science that I did not know about, and I just love that. I'm never going to forget that. I'm going to use that. I'm going to share that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's so great.
It's actually, you don't laugh because you're happy, or the question is, you know, which comes first, happiness or laughter? Well, this kind of says that because you laugh, you become happy.
Agreed. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so isn't that a pleasant thought? Whenever you're feeling really depressed, just force yourself to smile.
And that's I love that you said that, because when I share laughter medicine with people in my community, it's not uncommon for me to get a message from someone saying that I had a really hard time laughing. I had a hard time laughing with you. When I would start to laugh, I suddenly would want to cry. And I find that fascinating, and I always tell them that that's really important information for them to know, so that they know where they are in their ability to experience a true sense of joy. And if they have trouble laughing, that's okay. Can you just start by lifting the corners of your mouth and smiling? And just smile. And that's enough. That's enough. And then maybe someday you will be able to laugh with more freedom and more abandon. But for now, just try smiling.
Yeah, because you're cooling your brain. You're forcing yourself to feel better.
Yeah.
I don't know where I've heard that, but it's just a wonderful, wonderful thought. And since I love laughter, I've always loved laughter and smiling and, you know, mm-hmm. people have called me all sorts of names because of it. And, you know, okay, so I tend to smile a lot and laugh a lot, but, you know, it's probably one of the reasons I'm so happy all the time.
Yeah, and it's contagious, that kind of happiness and that laughter and that sense of joy. I'm sure that you inspire people to feel that within themselves just because you are that. So I think that's remarkable.
Yeah, it's definitely a good way to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, my mother was always happy. I'm sure that's who I got it from. My dad was always, you know, more of a pessimist, but mom was totally mm-hmm. optimistic, and my mom and I would stare and laugh all the time. My dad was like, what is wrong with you two? What is going on? And he
yeah.
could never figure
yeah.
it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, Doran, this has been wonderful to talk to you. I really appreciate spending this hour with you to talk about the book and my work and to get to know you better. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Stephen. Is there anything you'd like to say? I mean, any particular story or of your classes or the book or people you know? Anything you want to add?
I think I've shared the best of what I can share with you and your community so far.
Okay. Well, it doesn't look like anybody has any specific questions. Do we have any callers, people listening with specific questions? Please call in right now, 424-243-9540 and press 1. If I don't see anything, I'm going to assume nobody has any questions. Or if they do, you can probably write to you on your website and ask them.
Yes. StephenWashingtonExperience.com.
Okay. So does everyone get the name of that book? And why don't you tell us again the name of your book?
Yes, Recovering You, Soul Care and Mindful Movement for Overcoming Addiction.
Okay, and that's addiction to anything. And I want
mm-hmm.
people to realize that. And, well, if you don't have any final stories to say, then I guess we can pretty much wrap up tonight's show. And I really appreciate having you on here. It was truly wonderful, and I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Have a good night, Doran.
You too, Stephen. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.